Well, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Bree, it's lovely to see you.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome back to California.
I'm glad to leave.
Really?
Yeah. Saturday.
Well, probably a good thing.
Well, not permanently, but...
Not permanently, yes.
Great tour.
Bree does wonderful work with children. Oh. And all over a part of Canada and all over a part of California, too. Yeah. Great. Let's do names all the way around.
Violet. Judy.
Ron.
Three.
Yeah.
Nico.
Ross. Jeffrey.
Kathy.
John.
Tony.
Lester.
Angie. This is what we're studying, Mushu Toko mind, which is a word that appears in the sutra that we just chanted. It's the part of the Heart Sutra that says there is nothing to attain. So that's a strange thing to put as a title. What does that mean? But that's what the sutra says when we chant it in English. It says exactly that. With nothing to attain, the bodhisattva depends on prajnaparamita, and mind is no hindrance. Without any hindrance, no fears exist. Far apart from every perverted view, one dwells in nirvana. So this is going through this in a beautiful way. In chapter 4, it's kind of Buddhism 101, or Mahayana Buddhism 101. Using the words of the Heart Sutra that we just chanted, this Sino-Japanese strange sounds that we pronounce, to explain exactly what they mean. So he calls them the fundamental principles of Buddha's teaching. The first one is the seal of the three laws. That's the very first thing that we learn about what Buddha discovered as he sat. He studied with the finest teachers. He gave up the finest teachers and sat by himself in the forest with just a few people. And then he gave up that too and just sat down all by himself. And when he was finished, he came up with these three laws. Mujo, which is that everything is impermanent. There is no permanence. Nothing stays. We like to think that something stays. We like to think even that I might stay for a little while, but no, we don't get to stay either. It's too bad. So Mujo is the first one. Everything changes continually, and everything is impermanent. And Muga is the ego has no substance. Not that there isn't an ego, there is a person, there is a kind of mask that every being wears as we present ourselves in the world, including weeds and everything we see is kind of appearance. But it's not permanent either. It doesn't really mean anything. And although we think we are somebody, we're a different somebody all the time. If you really watch your mind, you see how many different people you can be in one day, depending on who you're talking to, what you're working on. Sometimes you're very responsible, and sometimes you're kind of giddy and silly, and sometimes you're talking to a child. And it's interesting to see how many people we are. So none of it is permanent. None of it stays. And the shoho kaiku is everything is empty. Everything is ku, which doesn't mean it has nothing in it. It's just that it's essential. Everything is connected to everything. So it's the most essential point, ku. And we chant it ku, ku, all the way through the chant. Through the form is emptiness, emptiness is form. And that's the point, that whatever thing, substance, exists is impermanent, and it's doesn't have a fixed self. This is a book for the moment, but it might be shredded up in China to be turned into something else with the pulp. And that pulp would be turned into something else. And it will have a life all the way through who knows how long. So that's the sense of its emptiness, not that it's not existing, but that it's existing in every different kind of way, all through time, you could say. All through, and it's true for all of us. We ourselves carry the DNA of way, 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 way back. So we're all connected, completely connected in that way. But we're totally impermanent at the same time. You can imagine he was blown away when he came up with these. He was really stunned. And then he didn't know what to do with it for a while. He said nobody would understand it. So we've been trying to understand it ever since, and taking it in. He says this idea appears, that everything is ku, appears at the very beginning of the Hanya Shingyo. Kanji zai bo zatsu gyo jin hanya haramita ji shoken go on kai ku. That ku at the end, all things are empty. The seal of the three laws distinguishes Buddhism from other religions. That's the first principle. The second principle of Buddha's teaching is the 12 links of interdependence. And if you've seen that circle that shows the course of life, of birth of a child, and then the child developing into somebody, and then the somebody becoming greedy, you could say, and then getting running through all the human states of life all the way till old age and death. And on old age and death starts out again with ignorance. Ignorance is the first one. So ignorance launches this whole circle. It's shown in the in the mandala as in the grip of a big black monster and its teeth, and that is time. So it's a caught place that the human being finds itself, and the only way to get off of it is to be completely human and step off. Just develop your practice until you're not an animal anymore, and not overwhelmed with greed, and not overwhelmed with old age and death and fear and all the things that we run through as human beings, but just keep our integrity and step off. We don't have to do that. That's the story. That's the image. So each action is produced from the harmony of cause and interdependence. There are many causes and conditions, and every single thing that happens is created by a cause and a condition, all the way back to the very beginning, to the Big Bang. So there's, he says, it's a negation of spontaneous creation. You can't say, oh, presto changeo, here is the world. It's all dependent on something else. So it's really a circle in a way. You can't find the beginning. It's all connected. The third one is Shitai, or the Four Noble Truths. So Buddha's first truths are the truth that all beings are suffering, and the cause of it is desire, and the illusion that that we're somebody, and that there is a way out of suffering, and that way is the Eightfold Path, which is just a very simple, ordinary way of living our life, which is fourth principle. It's right vision, right understanding, right thought, speech, action, livelihood, effort, memory, meditation. So it's very simple. Get a good job. Keep your mind clear. Have a straightforward view. Keep your mouth and your words polite, etc., etc. Just live well. The fifth one is the Ruku Haramita, or the Paramitas. So we know the Paramitas also, they're all familiar. Giving, the precepts, patience, effort, meditation, and wisdom. Those are the Bodhisattva practices. Very simple. And the seventh principle is Hotsu Bodai Shin, producing the mind of awakening. So it's about waking up. Whoever, says Dogen, for one moment forgets I and mine and enters into retreat and becomes familiar with the mind of awakening. We're so caught with I and mine, the great me. But that's the illusion. The eighth principle is the practice of Buddha's teachings and all the issues that practice may bring up. The essence of it, though, is just Zazen. So he says these principles come all the way through the Hanya Shingyo, all through the sutra. But basically, the experience of ku, of emptiness, is experienced in Zazen. We wouldn't even talk about it if we didn't have an experience of I hate to use the word emptiness because it's so misleading. The highest wisdom, he says, is Ku, the fundamental concept in Buddhism. A central theme, but we don't have another word besides that. He says the only method for this, we must understand Ku profoundly and intimately through both body and mind. The only method for this is the practice of concentration without thought, beyond all thought, the Ku consciousness of Zazen. Thus, the Hanya Shingyo is ultimately about Zazen, and Zazen leads to the profound understanding of the Hanya Shingyo. So then he gives us Ku, and he says it's the translation of the Sanskrit word for shunya or shunyata, which is translated as emptiness and void. And he doesn't like the translation either. He says that it's only one of the meanings. He says it means the idea that every existence and its elements are dependent on the principle of causality. As causal factors are perpetually changing, it follows that there can be no static existence. Thus, shunyata categorically denies the possibility of a static form in phenomenal existence. All phenomena are relative and interdependent. So that's basically the whole both three from the very beginning. It's just that nothing stays, nothing sticks, and everything at the same time is connected. That whatever happens to this book, it will still be a part of the world. Whatever happens to us, we're still part of the world. It may be that our atoms are in some other form, but form itself is emptiness, as we say. And emptiness is the forms that keep morphing and changing and morphing and changing. It's very dynamic. And it's all connected. So it's the connectedness of it that makes Ku really unspeakable in a way. We can't say it, but we can feel it. We can feel the whole connections. Sometimes in Sesshin, if you're sitting facing the wall will become transparent and you can feel everybody out there, everything that there is. It's all alive. Our sitting is alive in that way. So he says, Ku is what he calls existence without substance. It could also be called the plenitude of emptiness or potential plenitude, which sounds very, I don't know, hard to grasp. So then he goes on to impermanence, mujo. Everything in the cosmos is subject to the law of impermanence from atoms to galaxies. All existences are in a state of perpetual change. All are bound to life and to death. All living beings and all inanimate objects are subject to the same universal law of temporality. Birth, development, and growth followed by degeneration, death, extinction. Now, Dogen takes that very literally and has a whole chapter about how mountains are walking. That even mountains are full of life and are changing constantly. we just don't notice. There's so much we don't notice. But everything that we don't notice is still subject to these same laws. He says, we are born, we live, and we are placed in our coffin. Okay. Merely understanding this law should be enough to cut all attachment. Attachment to beauty, youth, and love. But we want to remain blind and continue our attachments. Our birth leads us inevitably towards death. Our bodies change, evolve, and transform as much as our minds do. The end of vital activity means death. This vital force is called ki. Well, we can connect that with the qi that we hear about all the time in Chinese medicine. We're always trying to develop qi or clear up qi or all of those things that's been around in our culture for a long time now. So it's the same. Qi is the same. Attachment arises from the illusion that the ego has its own durable existence, substance. And from this illusion, suffering is born. So if we're fixed on something and it changes, which it will, we often are thrown for a loop because we think it couldn't change, it shouldn't change, we don't want it to change because we're attached to it in a certain way. And yet everything changes and often throws us for a loop. And then N is interdependence. He talks about Dharma, the totality of the multitude of beings, and the direction or governance or support of all beings. We call Dharma truth, which is a little too simplistic, but it's about the law of the laws that keep the atoms and keeps everything together and supports it so that we. He says everything from water, air, and the human body to planetary systems is governed by this law in the perfect harmony of interrelationship. So you know, if you study the human body, it's a marvel. It's an absolute marvel how every single little part piece works with every other single little part and piece. It's a wonderful example of how the whole life of the cosmos is like that. Actually, every little single part and piece of our life is like that also. We just don't notice it. And the last is shiki and ku. Shiki meaning form, and ku, meaning emptiness. All phenomena arise from action, and movement comes from ku. Shiki is the phenomenal aspect of ku, and ku is the shadow of shiki is the shadow of ku, he says. Shiki is the ceaselessly moving structure of manifested cosmic power, and ku is non-manifested cosmic potential. Eternal, present in the infinity of things. So that's a lot. Um, I thought when I was driving down here that I should have really copied this for you all, because it's the most essential part of it. It's very helpful to refer to it, because it explains so much of what we talk about in our practice. It's what every great teacher talks about, every great sutra elaborates. And it's what we experience in sitting. Basically, it's about our sitting. Basically, it's nothing but about our sitting. How we are, each one of us, a world of life and action, coming and going, coming and going. So, there must be questions, things to say, Ross?
Excuse me, I had two questions. One, what's the English meaning of the, he's using a word that's apparently English that I've never heard of, the noumen?
Noumenon is the emptiness side.
The what?
There's noumenon and phenomenon. And noumenon is the opposite of phenomenon. So the phenomenon is the form, and noumenon is the emptiness.
Okay, yeah, because I thought it might almost mean like spirit, like...
It has been used that way. It has many, many meanings.
Oh, okay.
It's the other side of form.
Yeah, and the other one was, so it starts out by saying, everything is ku, emptiness, and then later he says, the Four Noble Truths, ku, suffering, all beings suffer. So was that the same word, suffering and emptiness?
I don't think so.
Different words with the same pronunciation.
It's the same.
Same pronunciation.
Pronunciation, yes. But not the same pictograph.
Ku is kum in Chinese, and ku is suffering in Chinese. But I guess the Japanese just use the same pronunciation for both.
For both of them?
Different, there'd be different words.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you found that. Kushu metsu do, suffering, all beings suffer. No, it's a different ku.
Right.
And that suffering doesn't mean you've broken a leg or you don't have enough money. It's not that kind of suffering. It's a misunderstanding that makes us all crazy, really. It's thinking that it's thinking, actually. It's too much thinking. It's just cooking up all kinds of ideas about how things are and how they should be, and making up story after story instead of actually noticing what's actually happening, which is the third noble truth. If you really begin to notice it, you'll see, you'll be amazed. And in order to live with yourself with all of that, just keep your mind occupied in a healthy way. Julie?
You mentioned about being awake, waking up.
Yes.
How is that different from a concept that's very common today, mindfulness.
Well, it depends on what is meant by mindfulness. There are so many different versions of that, including the medical ones that have been very helpful. It started out in a hospital in Massachusetts, so the modern version of it did. The ancient version goes back to the Satipatthana Sutra, which is the Mindfulness Sutra, which is instructions on how to pay attention, basically. And you pay attention to your mind ardently pay attention to first your body and then your breath and then your mind and then your life or something like that. It's beautiful. It's very, very beautiful. So people in Vajrayana, not Vajrayana, in I don't want to say Hinayana, I want to say the early Buddhist teachings, study it very, very hard. And that's a kind of essential part of being and being able to say to oneself what the body is doing and what the mind is doing and what the breath is doing and how. So it's a very awake in one way. In our understanding, it's different. It's just being present with whatever's going on. Being right now present in an active way, not passively just taking it in, but being ready to do whatever is needed to be done and just be awake to what's happening. So, Violet noticed that Tony didn't have the sutras, so she just jumped up and took her copy and went over and you did it together. It's that kind of awakeness. It's not fancy. It's just real helpful sometimes. Nasreen?
You thought that the cool can be like qi in Chinese medicine, but I think they have not the same meaning, because the qi in Chinese medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, means the energy that flow in every sentient being to keep it alive. And it's the same in Sanskrit, the same as prana.
Mm-hmm. Which
prana
is breath.
Means, yes. Prana,
yes.
Prana is the same as qi in Chinese medicine.
Ah.
Yes. But it's not the same as emptiness.
That's different.
Yes, it's different.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Isn't emptiness the same thing though? Isn't it the same force that keeps it all together? The interconnectedness?
Well, I guess we could say so. It's one of the things. It's the thing that keeps us together for sure.
So it can be qi.
It can be qi.
It can be qi or prana.
Yes.
Keep everything alive and connected, maybe, yes?
Yes. Well, yes. Everything is breathing.
Yeah.
Everything is breathing. And that's something you feel in Zazen. Just the grass and the trees are breathing. And we are grateful to the trees because we couldn't breathe without what they're breathing.
And she changes every single moment, every single.
She is changing.
She is changing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So it can be true.
Thank you. That's a good way to stop. That's beautiful. Thank you. Well, we don't have our Wendy or Marie. Wendy went to a talk tonight, and Marie is in Michigan writing a paper for her company. So she will be back in a couple of weeks. Wendy will be back next week. And so we'll just have to shuffle along without him, I guess. But somehow we got all set up. Thank you very much. And we're going to get unset up. So thank you very much. So I think we're fine. So let's do our 1 minute sit.